I don't know about you, but recently I've had a hard time watching the news. Good. Not the only one. It seems that whenever I turn the news on, whether it be on the TV or on the radio or even seeing all the different posts on my social media, basically the overwhelming message that I get consistently is everything is awful. And yet, sometimes there's this weird thing that happens. I don't know if you've experienced it. Most of the time, it's on something like NPR. They'll say something like, and 130,000 children are starving in Southeast Africa, but the New York Stock Exchange went up about 500 points. And you're just like, what? These both things are true? It's like some sort of like whiplash. We go between all of these stories saying everything is awful, and then these like things that are seemingly normal. And they're like, and the weather today is going to be partly cloudy. And you're like, but you just said children are dying. I call this narrative whiplash. Our heads are spinning back and forth as we get battered between two completely different narratives. The first narrative is everything is actually okay. All the people who are freaking out, well, they're just emotional. All of the things that they're talking about, the environmental destruction, we just need to research a little bit and it'll be fine. All of the things they're talking about of the children being hungry, well, if they just worked a little harder, they'll be good. But then we have the other narrative over here, which is the narrative that I see, well, quite frankly, on most of your Facebook feeds that I'm a part of, is this everything is going to hell in a handbasket. Our environment, our politics, everything. And so here we are, between business as usual and everything is unraveling. Between the story I want to be true, but can't quite get myself to believe, and the story that probably is true, but I really don't want to believe it because it kind of just breaks my heart. We're stuck between these two stories. One story that allows us to go to sleep at night with some degree of comfort, and the other story that keeps us awake at night. We're smack dab in the middle of these stories. And so the question gets lifted up. How are we to live in this space? How are we supposed to live when half of the world is telling us that the world is not broken at all, and the other half is telling us that it is 100% broken, and chances are there's little we can do to fix it. We're stuck in between these stories that seem incomplete and overwhelming at the same time. It's like we're Goldilocks. This story over here is just too wrong, but this story over here is just too hard, and so we're standing here turning around looking for that third bear with the story that'll be just right. That story that'll say, yeah, it's bad, but it's going to be okay. We just need to work a little harder. We just need to do this or do that, and everything will be fine. But we look around, and there's no bear apparent. There's no person. No person with this story gifting us this freedom. And so we all make different choices. Some of us decide to look away. We don't look at reality as it truly is, because it's too much. Or some of us look at it so deeply and allow it to envelop our lives so profoundly that it burns us up from the inside. And then we are left as depleted as ever. We need a new story. A story that looks reality square in the face and says, I'm watching you. But also has the heart to sustain the gaze for the long term, for the marathon we are in towards justice, of which there are no guarantees that we'll get there. We need a story that, as Joanna Macy says, will allow us to firmly believe with full confidence that right now is the best time to be living in the history of history. There are very few times in which I roll my eyes at 87-year-olds. When I read that quote of Joanna Macy's, my eyes were a-rollin'. It's kind of like someone said to me, middle school is going to be the best time of your life. No one says that. It's just a lie. No one is like, oh, if only I could be in grade 8 again. With all of those hormones. It'd be awesome. And yet, that's exactly the story we need. We need a story that tells us that living in this moment is the best possible moment because of the possibilities that abound, of the potential that we can join with, of the life that we can create together. I needed that story in junior high that would tell me this actually could be the most beautiful moment ever, if only I let it, if only I saw it, if only we were caring to each other. This new story that we need, well, it begins actually quite simply. It begins with just a simple breath. So I invite you to get into your breathing posture and breathe with me. This is the New Age portion. Just breathe in and out, noticing the tension or the shallowness or the depth of your breath. Keep breathing. Feeling the oxygen flow in, nourishing your lungs, and breathing out. That's the beginning of the story. The beginning of this new way of being. For that breath reveals to us the deepest of truths, that life itself is a miracle. And I don't mean any fantastical use of the word miracle. I simply mean that in this moment, we are gifted the opportunity to breathe, and we had to do nothing for it. That we didn't choose to exist, and yet we do. We didn't choose that there would be life at all, but there is. And when we look around in that breath, in that vista, in a community, that there is something undergirding it all that tells us that there is joy and love here. And that we did nothing to create it. That's the beginning of the story. That life is a gift that none of us asked for, but we received. Joanna Macy, that 87-year-old that I rolled my eyes at earlier, she is a Buddhist activist deep ecologist. And her work over the last 30 years has been trying to help us reconnect with the natural systems of the world, to the natural systems of this blue boat, which is our home, but also to find works that reconnect us to ourselves, to our experience of life itself, that will allow us to keep moving towards justice and love with all of our being, even though the way is hard and untested. And so she talks about four practices that sustain us, four practices, four movements that allow us to keep on loving a broken world. And the first movement, that movement from the truth of the miracle of life, moves into gratitude. That we start always with gratitude. That gratefulness actually bucks a trend in society, a norm that we are all taught, the norm that says that you need something more to be happy, that you need something else, that there's somewhere else that you would be, that you would be happier. The practice of gratefulness reveals to us our dependence on each other and our world, because without each other, we would not be able to exist at all. And I know what you're thinking. I read that in Oprah's magazine the other day. Why is gratitude so profound? Because in times of struggle and despair, it steadies our hearts and grounds us. It reminds us and roots us in this moment that there is something here worth fighting for, that there is a love, a joy, an experience that we would want to abound more deeply and for more people. And so on our road to justice, gratefulness steadies the pace and fuels us. But it also obliges us, right? When we experience gratefulness, we realize so much of our life we did nothing to deserve, and we are dependent on so other people, so we need to figure out a way to return that gift that we were given. But it doesn't end there. Joanna Macy talks about the second practice. If the first is rooting ourselves in gratitude, the second is honoring our pain. That just as we find gratitude for our lives, for our earth, for our loved ones, this is not enough on its own. The ship cannot run on gratitude alone. There must also be compassion. And not the fluffy compassion. The compassion that is required to keep on loving a broken world is a compassion that asks of us to suffer with our world. That when we see the images, we see the lives broken, torn apart by ice raids. When we see another species added to the endangered list, when we see another diagnosis of cancer, in those moments, we don't run away from our feelings. We have to feel them. We have to let them self inside of us. Now, we fear that experience of pain. No one signs up to want pain, right? No one says, do you know what would be awesome today? Chronic pain. It's not a thing. We fear the experience of pain, of the despair it brings, the fear of not fitting in because you are feeling a dagger in your heart and it brings you to tears and you look around and you realize that other people don't feel that. You cry out, why aren't you hurting? Don't you see what's going on? So better not feel it. Better step away. Or maybe you fear the guilt of your own and our collective inaction. You see the pain of our world and you think, I should be doing more. I'm a part of this pain. I don't want to feel that. So we take a step back and push it away. We fear, we're worried that if we share the depth of our pain with other people, our parents, our partners, our ministers, our loved ones, our children, that our pain will be too distressing for them. It'll be too much. But here's the truth. Here's why we need to honor our pain. Because whatever you feel when you look at our world that is broken, anger, sadness, fear, despair, rage, they are all correct responses to what is going on, right? Right? Because when we see destruction, it is right to feel angry. When we see pain, it is right to feel sad. We need to let ourselves experience it and tell others that we are experiencing it, because here's the secret. When we start to share the pain that we feel with other people, we realize two things. First, that we are not alone in the pain, that other people share it with us. And that maybe together we can do something because you don't have to hold it all. And the second thing we learn is that it doesn't last forever. It's easy to push it away and avoid it, and then it's hanging on us forever. But if we truly allow ourselves to experience the pain, it doesn't last forever. We realize that we're experiencing it together. And we acknowledge and share in the deepest of truths, the truth that we would never feel pain for something that we are disconnected from. And that's the essential piece. That's compassion. Because compassion, that suffering with, reveals to us the deepest of truths, the truth that we are deeply connected to every single being in the universe. The connectivity, the tissue of our very interdependence is revealed to us in compassion. Thich Nhat Hanh, that Zen master, posed this question: what do we need most? What do we most need to do to save our world? His answer: hear within ourselves the sound of the earth crying. Because our pain for the world reveals to us the fundamental truth of universalism, which is that we are all in this together. And once we realize that, once we realize that we're all in this together, the divisions that we create in our society between beings, between races, between genders, they all fall away. Because we see a fundamental humanity. Rilke has this to say, and I hate it and I love it: let this darkness be a bell tower and you the bell. As you ring, what batters you will become your strength. I hate it because it is true. And that's why every Sunday, one of the things we do together is we pray. Now, it doesn't really matter to me how we pray or who we pray to or whether you even like that word, because I know some of you don't. But what prayer is the practice of coming to attention, to experiencing who we are in this moment and honestly reflecting that to each other. Prayer is this practice in which we say, this is who I am today. This is what I am thankful for. This is what brings me pain. And we lift that up into the universe so that others may hear that and be with us in that moment. And so I'm going to invite us into a time of prayer. Shocker. But this isn't going to be a traditional type prayer. I'm going to start us off, and then I'm going to say some things. And then you're going to join in, all right? It'll make sense. Spirit of life and love, I am so confused. Sometimes I don't know where to turn. What is right seems wrong. I can't seem to make heads or tails of any of it. I feel my heart breaking. I feel my heart numbing. I don't know what to do. And yet, there is so much that seems to be weighing on my heart. And so I'm going to take this minute, and we're going to take this minute together, and we're just going to name that which is on our heart, that which is weighing on us, that which gives us pain and grief, so that we may hear in each other's voices the truth of our connection and to share in the pain together. And so let's lift up, say into this space that which is heavy on our hearts, so we may listen and receive and bless and share and suffer with, that we may practice compassion with each other. So what is it that brings you pain in this moment? What is it that brings you grief?
The terror of immigrant
families. I was 24 years old when I realized I had been lied to my entire life. There I was. Having gone through 24 years of generally idyllic existence, I mean, sure, there were the rough times, middle school, but beyond that, it was pretty good. And here I was, face to face, that everything I knew, everything I thought, everything I had been taught was wrong. Right and wrong didn't make sense anymore, truth and fact. And the worst part of it seemed that everyone was in on it. My parents, my loving parents, they were in on it. My teachers, those who were trying to instruct me with truth and knowledge, they were in on it. And the kicker, my favorite teacher, Miss Evans, in grade 3, well, she was the biggest culprit. For you see, one morning, I came into class, and Miss Evans, it was always a magical experience coming into class. You never knew what was going to happen. And one day, she brought us over into the corner, and she said, "Class, come over here and see." And there was this terrarium of sorts with sticks and leaves and plants. And she said, "Look closer." And we realized that there were these tiny little caterpillars that were inching their way up the branches, making tiny little bites in the leaves. They were adorable. And this was the moment that kind of blew my mind, because she said, "And class, in a little while, these caterpillars are going to turn into butterflies." And we were all like, "What? These? Where are their wings?" And she said, "Well, what's going to happen is, well, they're going to go onto a leaf, and they're going to turn themselves upside down, and they're going to pull a really nice blanket over themselves, and they're going to go to sleep for a while. And in that little chrysalis, that little blanket, they're going to transform into a butterfly. And we were all like, no way. That is ridiculous. But sure enough, I had a speck of belief and faith in me. And so each morning I would come into class and look for the butterflies that were maybe there, maybe not. And sure enough, one day, little gray butterflies were flapping in our terrarium. It was so beautiful, that transformation from something to something else, which made it even more difficult to realize that all of that was a lie. I'm serious. That story of the transformation from the caterpillar into the butterfly, that nice little cozy cocoon, that transformation is completely fictitious. It's fake news. Do you want to hear the real story of how a caterpillar turns into a butterfly?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay, here we go. So a butterfly lays some eggs. The eggs hatch into caterpillars. And the caterpillars, as soon as they're born, go on a rampage. The caterpillars eat hundreds of times their body weight each day. And they just consume and consume, and they molt and they poop and they grow bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until what scientists say, technically, they succumb to a crisis of overeating, fatigue, and breakdown. And it is at that moment that they decide to go into their chrysalis, their little cocoon. And if that wasn't bad, wait for the second part. So as soon as they're inside their chrysalis, a war is begun to be raged. For you see, there are parts of the caterpillar that want to stay a caterpillar, and there are parts inside the cocoon that want to become a butterfly. And the parts that are the caterpillar see these parts, these organizing cells, these things, this butterfly that's almost in existence, and the immune system says, that's not me, and it goes and kills it over and over again. Seriously. So the little butterfly things, they're like starting to arrange themselves, and they're starting to get into their little butterfly thing, and the caterpillar's like, nuh-uh, I'm going to kill you. And it goes on over and over and over again. The only thing that allows the transformation from the caterpillar to the butterfly to happen is that the caterpillar's immune system gets so worn out of having to fight the butterfly's transformation that it gives up, and the parts that were the caterpillar, the resistance, the immune system, liquefies and becomes the food for the rest of the butterfly. That is the real story. So when you see a butterfly, know that it is a veteran. Now, the true crisis wasn't really about caterpillars. What I realized in that moment when I heard the story of the true story of the caterpillar is I realized that we are all in a cocoon in this chrysalis together. That there is a battle being waged between a new way of being, that which centers our earth, centers each other, that says each person has inherent worth, that we all go together no matter who we are, and an old way of being that privileges a few, that says only some people are worthy, that only some people deserve the food that they need to exist. And what I realized is that unlike the butterfly, we're in this chrysalis, and we have no idea which side is going to win. We don't know if we and our society is going to be transformed into this new thing, or if we're going to be stuck in the old. This is the third step in our spiral. This is the place where we start to see with new eyes. We look at our society, and we see the battle between these two stories. The story of business as usual, and the story that everything is unraveling, and we see that third story. The resistance to the unraveling. The resistance to business as usual. This place where people are starting to honor each being and build ways of relating to each other that are just and good and loving. And it becomes our choice to see that. But then we need to figure out what we're going to do. That's the fourth vote. It's the fourth part of this spiral. That after we see this new way of being, we have to choose how we're going to go forth, how we're going to join with this battle between the transformation of the old and to the transformation of the new, to find our place in this new way of being that is being born. And that is why Joanna Macy is so right. So right to say that this moment in time is in fact the best time to ever be in existence. Because we are gifted a choice. Gifted a choice to join with the forces of this transformation. To become midwives to a new way of being. And that is a gift of possibility that we would have never had before. And so how do we sustain ourselves? How do we sustain ourselves as we join with the forces of transformation? Well, there's a Shambhala story that says that when we go into this battle, we need only two weapons. Usually we don't talk about weapons here, but bear with me. The first weapon is compassion. We need the insight into our radical. Compassion gives us the fuel, the motivation to go where we need to go, to do what we need to do, because compassion allows us not to be afraid of the pain, not to be afraid to look at reality, not be afraid of touching the sadness and brokenness of our world. It allows us to enter in it, to build relationships through it. When you're not afraid of the pain of the world, there's nothing that can stop you. But alone, that weapon is not enough. It burns us out. If we only suffer with, we forget ourselves as these creatures that need compassion too. And so that's where the wisdom comes in. The second weapon, wisdom, which is the knowledge of our interdependence. With that wisdom that we are all in this together, you know that this is not actually a battle between the good guys and the bad guys. You know that the line between good and evil run through the landscapes of each of our hearts. You know that we are so interwoven in the fabric of life that even the smallest of actions can have impacts that we can never understand. And you also know that you don't need to do it all because there are other people in the web doing the work too. On its own, this wisdom is cold and callous and rational. But coupled with compassion, it brings us forth. I want to tell you that the world is still beautiful, Rebecca Baggett writes. I tell you that despite children hurt on city streets, shot down in schoolrooms, despite the slow poisons seeping from old and hidden sins into our air, our water, our soil, despite the thinning film that encloses our aching world, despite my own terror and despair, I want you to know that spring is no small thing. That the tender grasses curling like a baby's fine hair around your finger are a reoccurring miracle. I want to tell you that the river rock shines like God, that the crisp voices of the orange and gold October leaves are laughing at death. I want to remind you to look beneath the grass, to note the fragile hieroglyphics of ants, snails, and beetles. I want you to understand that you are no more and no less necessary than the brown recluse, the ruby-throated hummingbird, the humpback whale. I want to say to you like Neruda that I am waiting for a great and common tenderness, that I still believe that we are capable of attention, that anyone who notices the world must want to save it. May we be those people. Blessed be.